Today's episode is brought to you by SalesCred Pro, the strategic resource for B2B sales that fortifies your credibility and accelerates the trust building needed for building successful business relationships. Get your free 7-day trial now at salescred.com/PRO. Welcome to the Manage Smarter podcast with hosts C. Lee Smith and Audrey Strong. We're glad you're here for discussions on new ways to manage smarter, hire, develop, and retain talent, improve results, and propel team performance to new heights. This is the Manage Smarter podcast.
One thing we've talked a lot about on this show lately, Lee, is technology, you know, the rise of AI and CRMs and all the bells and whistles that go with that. But our guest today says that's actually kind of ruining marketing. I can't wait to hear what he says.
This is a topic after my own heart because, as we've discussed in prior episodes, like one of my pet peeves is salespeople that use technology as a crutch rather than relying on their humanity and their communication skills, their empathy, and everything like that. And so I can't wait to crack the can open on this one.
I know, it's going to be great. Welcome to Manage Smarter, everyone. We're so glad you're here. My name is Audrey Strong. I am the Senior Vice President of Communications at SalesFuel.
And I'm C. Lee Smith. I'm the CEO and founder of SalesFuel.
That's right. So today, Ryan Rood, founder and CEO of Lake One, coming to us live from Minnesota. It's a modern marketing partner to B2B brands specifically. That's what his firm does. Looking to build and scale revenue systems through strategy, technology, as we said, and hands-on support. You can find Ryan's thinking on growth and publications like CMS Wire, Smart Insights, and more. Ryan, glad you're here. So technology ruined marketing. How? Which tech? And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, because we don't want to come across as curmudgeon-y, right? Like, all these newfangled things.
Get off my lawn.
Like, they're ruining our world. No, we're not like that at all. We love technology here, but there's a right way and a wrong way to use it, I would suspect.
Totally. Well, thanks so much for having me. Thrilled to be here. And 100%, there is a right way. There is a wrong way. And just generally speaking, like the reaction that I have or why I have this perspective of technology ruining marketing is it made us all lazy. It made it way too easy for us to scale without really having to think about what we were scaling. So all of a sudden, automation systems, mass email systems, now with AI, it's really easy to make things in mass production from marketing and sales without actually really thinking about, is this what I want to be putting out into the market to my buyers in mass quantity? I think you said it spot on about the humanity and taking the humanity out of it. There's a saying that a friend of mine says about marketing automation is that if you don't have, you know, your brand in place and the why people should care about your business, all marketing automation is going to do is automate crap to more people faster. That doesn't do any good to anybody.
Are there any specific technologies? I mean, I guess don't name names, but specifically that you find more problematic than others?
So I find any of the the bot, like turn it on and forget it, the set it and forget it, the Ron Popeil of sales and marketing.
I used to have a Vegematic. I know.
Exactly.
It slices, dices, makes perfect Julian fries.
It's anything like that really is the stuff that I'm talking about. Is because when it's in the wrong hands of people, when it gets in the hands of people that aren't thinking about who they're communicating to and why, that's what really scares me. One of the phrases that makes me cringe when I hear clients say it is email blast. We need to blast emails. And I'm like, whoa. Is there any person on the planet that wants to be blasted? No. As I'm like, let's just put ourselves in the shoes of the recipient on all of this. And it's like, you know, the golden rule of sales and marketing. So it's really those things that make things easy to set and forget. So I'm thinking, you know, email marketing, marketing automation. There's a lot of social media automation out there right now where I feel like I'm getting, you know, the other folder on LinkedIn is just complete noise. And it's completely distracting and really frustrating. And what makes it really hard for the people, especially on the sales side of the house, that are trying to make connections, is now your job is 10 times harder because you're still you're actually thinking about how to make a meaningful connection, but you have to wade through all this garbage. And so many people are just desensitized and checked out and don't even want to look in their inbox, don't want to look in their social media accounts because it's just garbage.
Yeah, I'm also reading a lot of things lately showing that the engagement level and the participation level in social media is actually on the decline now. And I have to think that that's one big reason why. And so my question to you is like, okay, what can people then do to stand out from all this mass produced bullshit, you know, and be that shining diamond in that mound full of crap?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know what I find really funny, and I say this to people, and they're like, the digital guy is saying this. It's go back to what you would do if the internet didn't exist. I say that to a lot of our clients right now, because they're seeing all of the things that used to work not working because all the channels are declining. And it's conversations about, well, what did you do to market your business, sell your business before all of these tools were in hand? It's things like showing up at trade shows. It's things like showing up at local networking groups. It's things like direct mail, which is crazy to think about. But
it works. Yeah.
It works. It absolutely works. And it's breaking through because what you saw is you saw this surge of all of these organizations that were behind the eight ball from a digital perspective glob onto digital strategies and channels during the pandemic because that's all they had. And for a while, that was okay, but then that started to decline. And all of a sudden, if you look at like sales numbers, phone calls, people that were actually making phone calls started to have a spike in response rate because people were stuck at home, sick of responding to emails and desperate to just talk
to a regular person. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So it's like you have to like react to the data that you're seeing and really think about, okay, you know, what would resonate with me? If I'm getting sick of all of these messages from all of these channels, what are the things that perk my interest? And it is things like, you know, meeting face to face. It is things like I do notice things when I get a direct mail piece that targets me at my home as a business owner. And it's a very specific targeted piece of content, or even, you know, something in a podcast or something through, you know, watching Hulu and I see an ad that is clearly targeted to business owners, different things like that.
Yeah, sort of like think about it, like when you receive a gift card in the mail, you know, how you respond to that versus you receive a gift card via an email. Yeah. Totally different feelings when you get them and receive them. And I think that the same thing applies here.
Very much so.
We have basically don't do any cold emailing blasts, as you said, but I want to ask you specifically about technology and lead nurturing in the marketing qualified leads and the sales qualified leads. And you talked a little bit in another podcast I watched about what do we all agree is the qualifications for each category of that. We just had a huge meeting at our mothership, right, Lee?
I spent 2 days at HubSpot training going through this or whatever. So, and even then people don't agree.
So what is your advice on how to get more conversions out of those? Because one of the things you said, does this person want to hear from me? Well, in our case, what we're sending to, I would think yes, but now what? What makes it better?
So you guys kind of touched on the topic first of the internal alignment on this, what does qualified mean to the business is a big part of it. Because what we think is qualified, it may not necessarily actually be qualified for the buyer. So really doing the archaeology historically and saying, you know, at what point was it clear that the friction in the sales process was reduced in having conversations with these great fit clients, and replicating those things. But very similarly, I find even the nurturing of the pipeline, the nurturing of the lead flow and using some of those same channels, that are already saturated is where we fall down. So even if somebody meets those qualification criteria and you think they should be really engaged because they've engaged with the website this many times, they've looked at these certain types of pieces of content that our business and our organization thinks indicate a readiness to buy, all of these things, they're still getting inundated in all of those other channels in terms of, you know, whether it's top of the funnel in the buying stage, the access to quote unquote intent data is extremely easy to get to now with a lot of the data providers, Apollo, Sales Intel, all of them. So even if they are qualified with your business, there's probably a ton of other people going after them with the garbage. So it's, again, really thinking about, okay, if they are qualified and if you're in a high ACV business, do something that's going to spark interest, that's going to really stand out. Invite them to an event, a really high touch personalized event. If it's in a market where you have 8 or 10 other people that are all in that, invite them to a CEO roundtable and have conversation about what's challenging in their business, different things like that. Because I guarantee if you have, you know, if you have a six-figure potential contract in the works, you are willing to spend a few $100 on a night out for each of them, and you can actually get them in a room to talk to them, that's far more valuable than wasting that money on email programs, continued ad spend, and just kind of going into the you know, into the ether with everybody else that's waving the look at me flag.
This is one of the things that I end up saying in these meetings that Audrey talks about, is that scavengers are not prospects. You know, just because someone downloads a white paper, they keep coming to the website, they go to the blog and everything like that, they're there to get free information. You know, they're there for the freebies. They're not, and a lot of them are not in the market to actually look at buying a product.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what's your advice then as far as, I mean, do we just take the, you know, it's kind of weird because on one hand, the downloading of a white paper is a buying signal, but on the other hand, it's not a buying signal. So what's your advice for factoring this into lead scoring?
Yeah. So I've come up through the era of inbound and the era of lead forms and all of that. I've really kind of taken a completely different point of view on gating and all of this, and really just creating, democratizing access to all of that information, breaking down the barriers. Don't put up lead forms. Don't, because I love the scavenger point of view. I'm going to steal that and probably internalize that a little bit, because it's so true. It's just like, just because somebody downloads something and coughed up an email address doesn't mean that they want to talk to you yet. So what I really try to look at is kind of reach and influence. So how can we use that information and that insight to make your brand prolific, make it so that you are seen everywhere, that everybody is talking about that topic? I mean, what you guys are doing with the podcast is a big part of that, whereas it's like all of a sudden, you know, these sales conversations and the true buying discussions are kind of happening, you know, in the dark. They're happening outside of the realm of what, from a marketing perspective, we've been traditionally taught to attribute everything to, right? Somebody downloads a form, they clicked on an ad, they follow this really beautiful linear journey. We all know that that's crap, that's garbage. Mm-hmm. That's not at all how this works. It's things where this education journey that they go through is zigzaggy. There's this structure diagram that's fantastic. And they
it's not a linear journey, it's chaos, man.
Yes, it's complete chaos. So that's why I don't even look at the form fills for content. I literally am just like, if you want to meet with me, and then tell me where you heard about us. That's
some
all
people
I
would
care
say
about.
On that lead, on that download form or whatever, there's put a box there that says like, I'd like to talk to a salesperson about blank, and don't default check it. And if it goes through the effort of actually checking the box, now you know you got something. Otherwise, you got nothing.
All right. Well, we wanted to talk about AI too, because that's being baked into everything. What's your thought on that? Lee is also like a super mega early adopter of everything. So you guys need to talk about this.
Totally. So we've been leaning in on AI as well and trying to figure out, you know, one, how do we incorporate it into our business? And then two, how can we support our clients with it? My approach to it is, still needs the human component into it, is that there is a need, as the business is thinking about, you know, testing and dabbling in it, seeing how it comes out, building frameworks that incorporate the human layer for both the input and the output, and potentially having like another evaluation level. So I can kind of share how the framework has been built for us internally, is that we have any of our creation processes are very driven by, here's our framework for the content we're creating, the things that we're trying to ideate on. And we use that as kind of an initial iteration, leveraging AI tools and doing kind of the the tone of voice and all of that. And then there's in a round of edits where a human comes in and says, this is what, you know, this, you were close here, you missed it here. There's also an evaluation. Is the stuff coming out garbage? Because there's there's a lot of interesting things that come out, and we put it back through again. Like, we, like, depending on the complexity of the subject matter that we're going through, we may have two or three rounds of that human interaction with it to get it to the point where it is our voice and it's really our perspective. It's not, you know, chat GPT, write me 5,000 words on X.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, when it comes to human verification, particularly, of course, we talk a lot about in terms of research because we're a sales research company. And we see that when people say, oh, I can just go in and put this in where it's going to research stuff for me. And they're like, that's like, yeah. And the thing is that, you know, by its own admission, they tell you that it's going to give you erroneous stuff from time to time. It's like, your credibility is shot. Take that out to a client and pitch that and say, like, and they know different or whatever. You have no credibility from that point on.
100%.
It's not worth the risk. Human verify stuff, human edit stuff, because it's great. You know, or the analogy that you know we've heard some people use is that treat it like an intern, treat it like an assistant, but you're still in control. And it's just sort of like, you know, or when I'm driving my car, you know, and you put it on the autonomous driving or something like that. Well, the car may be driving itself and everything like that. You're still responsible for what that car does, and you're still responsible for what that AI does, that output there, because it's like, you know, it's got your name on it and that's your brand.
Totally agree.
Do you have since you're a tech head, a forward thinking where AI is going? I would love to hear your take on that.
Oh,
where are we
gonna
be a year from now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is we'll roll this
is a
tape
fun
back
question.
A year from now.
That's not rolling this tape back. This is one of those areas where I don't even know that 6 months ago I could have predicted the rate at which it's going. I think what will be interesting a year from now is seeing how the best way I can describe it is the honeymoon period is kind of what we're in right now. And I think there's a lot of industries that are afraid of it, where I think there's some really interesting applications that could be powerful. And when I say powerful, I'm thinking beyond, like, sales and marketing isn't earth chat. Like, we're not changing the world with sales and marketing.
Brain surgery.
We don't have kidneys and coolers is the way I describe it.
Oh.
Like, let's keep it in perspective. But I do think the capacity for advancement in areas of healthcare and, like, true global change in the processing power and harvesting that in a way that's really... that was a bad choice of word after the kidney.
Harvesting. I was just going to say, ugh.
But that's where I think it could get really interesting. And I think it takes time with a technology of this nature for those types of industries to really adopt it in a way where they're not scared of it.
I'm convinced that AI will help lead to cures for cancer. I mean, that's where we use it. And I also kind of feel like at this moment in time, and I think this is a prediction I would feel safe to make, that a year from now won't be outdated. But we're at the same point now that we were with the internet and business leaders and their adoption of internet back in the mid-90s, where some people decided, oh, it's a fad. It's like, or some people kind of, they didn't like where it was going or how it was going to disrupt their business, so they put their heads in the sand. Other people, though, just embraced it and, you know, and took full advantage of it. And they were first to the web. They were the first to e-commerce. Everything like that, and those are the ones that survived and thrived, while the other ones just kind of died off.
Totally.
And I think we're in the same place right now with AI, with business leadership. So head in the sand is not going to work. This is a transformational technology that you've got to be all in on.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've got about a minute left. Lake1.io is your website. Do you want to tell people about your firm?
Yeah, so we're a HubSpot Solutions partner. So HubSpot is at the center of a lot of the technology ecosystems that we manage. So set up, scale, and optimize that ecosystem for B2B, as you mentioned. Our sweet spot within B2B is really manufacturing, financial services, med tech, and professional services. 10 years, we've been around 10 years, just celebrating our 10th anniversary this fall. And we support, like I said, the HubSpot ecosystem, and then also provide resources around performance marketing, content marketing, email marketing as well.
That's great. This has been really fascinating. We were really looking forward to talking to you today. It's a great topic. And you're coming back a year from now. I'm writing this date down.
We'll see and we'll listen to what we said, and we'll see how long we were.
It won't actually be live people doing the interview. We'll all be robots showing
exactly. I'll make sure that the AI version of myself is available.
I hope this podcast finds you well.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on iTunes, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more great information at salesfuel.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.